Everything's going okay? Okay. Good morning. Who's never been to a BSD CAN before? Ooh. That's about 30. Of those people that raised your hands, how many of you went to the Royal Oak last night to pick up your registration pack? 30 people turned up last night to pick up the registration packs. That meant the registration desk crew had a lot more time to drink beer.
You're welcome. See how nice you are.
We can tell Mr. O'Brien is here today. Welcome to BSD CAN 2011. We have many fun and interesting things to do this year, like every other year. We have a platinum sponsor this year, NetApp. That's not to say that we've not had platinum sponsors before, but I'm just pointing that out. We also have a gold sponsor, IX Systems. We have Usenix. Usenix has been with us for many years. Isilon? We use them at work. I should know them. I'm sorry. I'm really bad at names. Everyone knows that. FreeBSD Foundation, are they in here or are they still outside at the moment?
One's here.
Google has been with us, I think, every year. Perhaps not the first year. Juniper is back again this year. They've got lots of people in here, I think, or there's lots of them at the Dev Summit. Again. Panasis? Thank you. They're all around. Adara Networks. Who's here from Adara Networks? Hi. We've got a brand sponsor, but their logo hasn't turned up. I'm sorry. It's in there. It's... Thank you. Who knows Peter? If you've never heard of Peter, you haven't been around long enough. Oh, we've already seen this one. I have additional hardware with me all the time now. I don't know. I think it's surgical steel. So, travel is wonderful. I've had a really good time traveling this year. The night before I was to leave for Ottawa, which was Wednesday the 26th, I think, I showed my passport to a friend, and she said, "Oh, when was this photo taken?" And I said, "It should stay there." And she said, "Oh, March 23rd. What year?" My passport had expired the previous month. It's not very difficult to get into your home country with an expired passport. It's much more difficult to get out. I had a Nexus card, which no one knows about unless you travel back and forth across the border. It's basically an identity card that you get after a retinal scan and fingerprinting. That's probably what got me across the border okay. So I'll just renew it while I'm up here. Got my parents to get the forms. I started reading the forms, and I discovered that this required document is a birth certificate, which is back in Philadelphia, which I can't go get because I have an expired passport. But the advantage of that is that there's a new special form that you can fill out. If your passport is less than 6 years old, you can get a new passport without your birth certificate. So I picked that up on Monday. Starbucks out here closes at 3 p.m. It's not open tomorrow. Okay, so, but there's a second cup just back there, and there's another Starbucks just over the bridge. It's on the map. Just over the bridge, second cup just up the road. OpenBSD, are they here this morning? Only one. I know there's at least five of them here.
They're heading down to the Royal Oaks.
I think they're headed home from the Royal Oaks. Okay. Glad you're here. Singular as opposed to collective. I wish there was more apart from the guy. It's difficult to get more of me. This is not a trick slide. I was at the IPv6 tutorial on the first day of the tutorials. I was there all day. Loved it. There's a couple of talks about ZFS as well. Who's giving those? Are they here? Brooks. Yeah, I remember that. I'll be there. Those are my favorite hot topics at the moment. Thanks to the sponsors. We've already gone through them. If you know the sponsors, tell them thank you. To give you an idea of how important that is, the entire first BSD CAN costs less than one gold sponsorship. Okay? Things like the lunches, the bigger rooms, they cost a lot of money. This room alone one day is $410. Multiply that by four. Sorry?
Canadian?
Yes, which is more than American at the moment. So basically, our budget for this year is more than eight times what the first year was. Program committee. They do all the hard work, reading all the submissions, deciding what you're actually going to hear when you get here. The speakers, they do the next level of hard work, which is what the program committee gets to do, but the reason that you're here is because they're here. The volunteers out in the registration desk, the people that help me put up the signs, the people that put up the schedules that you're seeing outside the door, I can't do all that. The attendees, thank you. I mean, we can do all this work, but if you guys don't turn up, it's no fun at all. So thank you. Stacy, are you here? No, that's another conference. Stacy is associated with PGCon. She asked me if I had anything I needed help with. If you're a speaker and you flew here and we paid for you, chances are Stacy booked your travel. Past year, no, that's it. Okay, I've blathered on enough. We're going to get Peter up, have him go through his talk. Oh, yes. I did tell George to interrupt me at this point.
Okay. So you probably don't want to hear my voice that loud. So very quickly, we're going to do a work in progress. I don't want to clip it. We're going to do a works in progress session tomorrow afternoon, and for people who want to submit a work in progress, which is a 3-minute talk with 2 minutes of questions, you should email me your slides in Keynote, PowerPoint, or PDF to gnn@freebsd.org before 11:59 Eastern Standard Time tonight, just for the technical people in the audience. Exactly. So 3 minutes. You'll get to speak for 3 minutes, 2 minutes of questions, and we will hold people to 5 minutes each. I can't believe there's a question.
George, do you really mean Eastern Standard if we're on daylight?
If you're not well behaved, I'm going to switch to an Indian time zone, which is a half hour off, yes? Have your microphone.
Have you ever heard the expression herding cats? Yeah, pussy.
What herding cats is like. What you want to do is do a meeting like this with over 2,000 or even 3,500, which we had at Usenix in San Francisco, in 88. It was something close to hell, I believe is the only thing I can think about. Do I just do forward on this thing?
Yeah.
Okay. No, no. The arrow's a good thing. Right. Okay. It only has one, push bar. That's all right. Ah, never mind. I understand. Anyway, hi. That's me. I've written a bunch of books. I've done a lot of work, and I've met a lot of... Pardon me? Oh. I know some of those people. There's no... Wait, where's the pause thing on this? Or isn't there one? Okay. There is no... Oh, space bar. How clever. Why is this one different from ours? Oh, well. Unix is now 46 years old this coming summer. That makes it more than just a mature operating system. Rob Pike is famous for having said years ago that not only was Unix dead, but it doesn't even stink anymore. One might point out that he's working for Google, which does, in fact, run a derivative of Unix, because that's the way reality works, at least some of the time. Oh, lovely. Well, the first thing I'd like to do is take you back... Damn it! Pardon me. Back in time, which this isn't going to let me do. All right. Ah, the arrow key. You said the space bar. There's nothing like cooperation. Anyway, may I point out, since we all know that history is boring and has nothing to do but dates in it. Yeah, if you feel like playing with it. 167 years ago, May 1844, to be precise, Samuel Morse's new telegraph actually ran from Washington, D.C. to Baltimore, Maryland at 30 characters per minute. Just think about that as you connect to your N megabytes per second things. Much more recently, only 51 years ago, every computer was an enormous single-user standalone thing. Object, whatever one should call it. But in 1961, as the result of a conversation with John McCarthy, Fernando Corbato at MIT invented CTSS, the Compatible Time Sharing System. CTSS meant that several users could operate on the IBM 7090, in batch processing, of course, at the same time. He also employed the term daemon, a familiar character. He was inspired, of course, by James Clerk Maxwell. It's very difficult to think about what was going on. And what they were operating on was, there's the front page of my copy of the Programmer's Guide, which came out a year and a half later in 63, of course. And there's one of the machines that they were thinking about. This is an IBM 7090. This is the one at NASA Ames, or was the one at NASA Ames. They were enormous. I think that's the only... And lived in rooms that made the air conditioning in here seem like heating. At any rate, in 69, Dennis and Ken, inspired by Doug McElroy, a great man who is largely uncredited, invented, I'll call it, Unix. I'm going very fast. In 71, the first manual was produced, I knew the word, the 15th of May, which would be this coming Sunday, 1974, Lou Katz, founding president of Usenix, also held the very first Unix users meeting at Columbia University Physicians and Surgeons, 15th of May, 1974. Lou,
at this minute is undergoing heart surgery, so Lou, this is for you, this talk. Anyway, I'm skipping again. In 1984-5 at Salt Lake City, Stu Feldman, now also at Google, I think almost everyone is, at that time at Bell Labs, excuse me, after that at Bellcore and after that at IBM, gave a talk on the development of Unix operating system, comparing it to the history of architecture. I'm going to skim very quickly his slides. Kirk, you were there in 85. Eric, were you there? Right. Anyone else who was at Usenix in Salt Lake City in 85? Oh, I'm terribly sorry. Does anyone remember the beer party? Where?
I remember the hangover part.
Where the beer was stored out of the back door of a ski cottage. So, with all the bottles embedded into a snowbank, and you opened the door and pulled out the bottle. Yes, life was very good back then. At any rate, Stu gave what I still think of as the best keynote I'd ever heard. Incidentally, Stu also was the author of Make, which appeared... Do people still use Make besides me? Oh, great, because I discovered last week or the week before that Mac OS X has no man page for Make. And in fact, Make isn't there unless you go and get and put on the developer's tools. Clearly ordinary people. I'm not a developer. I'm a user. I use lots of stuff. But I was, I think pissed is the right word. At any rate, Stu wrote Make in 1978. My favorite quote from Stu was that he said in 79 in Toronto, I wanted to improve the design, but I couldn't. I already had 7 users. That's how fast stuff changes. Anyway, let me go ahead. He began talking about Hagia Sophia, which is in Istanbul, Constantinople if you prefer. It is now a mosque. It started out as a Greek Orthodox church. It was again a Greek Orthodox church for a brief period and is now some sort of heterogeneous object, but largely a mosque still. It has more different styles, bits and pieces amalgamated than anything else you can think of. However, Unix began really as nice, simple architecture, early Gothic, and went on from there to being quite ornate, as in this late Gothic cathedral in Rouen. But it went from there to what we would call the flamboyant of the Renaissance. This is Chambord, also in France. And from there to this is Fallus in Portugal. Just so you don't think it's all in France or all in Germany or all in Austria, this is Karlskirche in Vienna, which is what we call Baroque or Rococo. And then in America, which Stu did not get to, we slightly simplified things. This is Frank Lloyd Wright's Falling Water. I think one of the most beautiful, uninhabitable buildings anyone ever created. I mean that quite seriously. He designed and built in the furniture as well, and it's unsittable. I've never tried lying down on what was purported to be a bed, but I can imagine it as being pretty horrible. But you might see this as a very early Linux or an early BSD, perhaps before 4.1. Something like that. Really simple, and if you're not good at it, you're not going to be able to use it. It was, to be quite simple, user hostile. You had to be an Eric or a Kirk, etc., to really use these things. All right, well, I already mentioned the beer in the snow, which was also in Utah. Let me talk about another story that involves Eric. in 1986, in January,
the Usenix Association acquired, through a great deal of wheeling and dealing, a Sun 360. A Sun 360 1/3/60 and 2/3/50s for use in our new office. And from the word go, mail was erratic, sporadic, and effectively didn't work well. So I asked our then sysad, Ed Gould, an old BSDer, who came and worked for us one day a week, could he fix it? And Ed fiddled with it for about 2 hours and said, that's fine, and went away, and it didn't work. The next day, fortuitously, one of our board members, John Quarterman, visited the office, and John said, oh, I can do that, it's a snap. Well, anyone who's ever looked at a sendmail CF file knows that a sendmail CF file is not a snap. I've looked at them twice, and I don't want to have anything to do with the code whatsoever. Well, he screwed around, so it didn't work at all. And when you got an office for an organization that at that time had well over 3,000 paying members, etc., being offline on your email for days at a time is not a good thing for some strange reason. And so I said, what the hell, I will go to the source. And I telephoned Eric. This was before Sendmail was a corporation. And I said, I know we cannot afford your daily rate. I will take you for lunch anywhere. Come and fix it, please. Eric came in and spent the first 20 minutes cursing at whoever it was that screwed this up so badly. I refrained from telling him that the two guys were both people he knew, but and knew quite well. But it was really quite something to realize how, oh, I can do that, will really screw up any system you can think of. And I really mean any system. Well, you know, being head of a conference means you're responsible. If you're in a big conference in a hotel, you're also responsible for the drunks, the maniacs, etc., that all of us have, that we know and love, who are part of our entire association. Thus, for example, in June 1986, no, I don't have a picture, so it doesn't matter. In June 1986, Usenix met in the Atlanta Hilton. Actually, that Atlanta Hilton no longer exists. It was comprised basically of two cigar boxes. One was horizontal and was about 5 or 6 stories tall, and one was vertical, placed at one end of that, and was where most of the rooms were. And after the first day of this conference, I went to my room and I lay down. And at about, well, let's call it 12:15, there's a rapping on my chamber door. And I stagger out of bed and I open it a crack, and it's the manager of the hotel. Your people are in the swimming pool. I said, I beg your pardon. Then I realized, yes, you know. So I pulled on a pair of jeans and a T-shirt, and I went with him. The swimming pool was on the rooftop of the horizontal cigar box, if you can visualize this at all. And it was surrounded by a chain-link fence, which was gated and locked. And in the pool were about 6 or 8 Usenix members, soaking wet, shoes, jeans, T-shirts, etc., going around and around the pool, mostly walking, chanting that they were the Usenix synchronized swim team.
And this poor dweeb said, and now what are you going to do about this? Like I'm going to haul each one out and give him a spanking or something. So I went over to the fence and I said, hey, guys, and finally after, you know, 2 or 3 minutes, I actually got someone's attention. I am not naming names here, incidentally. It was a very embarrassing thing for the 6 or 8 of them. At any rate, and he came out and I said, you know, you guys got to stop this. He said, why? You know, I said, well, you're not allowed here. He said, well, we're here. You've got to realize logic is part of being a programmer. I said, well, the sign said no swimming after 10 p.m. So we can just walk around? I said, no. I said, anyway, this guy who's in charge of the hotel is really very upset, and what happens is that we'll never be able to come back here. That clearly didn't cut anything. And I had my inspiration for that meeting. I said, anyway, you know, there are lots of people in this hotel who aren't part of Usenix, and some of them might be elderly or might be small children, and you guys making all this noise will prevent them from resting and getting sleep, and it'll be your fault. That clearly meant something. So he wandered back to the pool, and the 6 or 8 of them had a long discussion. They decided that, yes, they should get out of there. So I presume some of you know what a pair of blue jeans must weigh like after it's been soaking wet in chlorinated water. They hauled themselves out of the pool. It took time. They wandered over to the fence, at which point the manager said, wait, I'll unlock the gate. Whereas with unanimity, they said, no, no, we broke the rule by climbing the fence, so we have to do it okay, make it okay, may have been what he said, by climbing back out. So I've got a half dozen drunk programmers in soaking wet clothes at 1:15 in the morning, trying to climb over a chain-link fence, I mean about 4 feet tall or so. It took a while. They managed to do it. I got them out of off the rooftop and through the glass doors, and I said, now lock these doors. He said, oh, I can't do that. It's legally a fire exit. I said, lock the doors or they will be back here in 15 minutes. So he proceeded to lock. I don't know whether he unlocked it again, say, at 3 in the morning. But at any rate, he locked it. I could follow the track and see they'd gotten to the elevators. I have no idea where they went then. But it's what happens at a very large conference. I mean, Kirk himself can tell you what happens if you're having a conference in a hotel with a large atrium like the Hyatt in Phoenix, where somebody came up with a tank of helium. And so Kirk and Eric and some other guys organized a slow balloon race. The goal of this was to take the inflated balloon and to tie to its strings such things as paper clips, books of matches, and such things, so that it would ascend very slowly. And then, of course, as the gas diffused at the top of the atrium, it would then start descending, etc. And the last balloon to come down would be deemed the winner, being the worst balloon. At any rate, it was actually quite entertaining and no one was being injured, etc. But in the course of guiding his balloon, Kirk McCusick, the father of BSD, stepped backwards and broke the terracotta pot that a plant was sitting in, which, I mean, you have no idea. Hotel managers must be trained to get agitated. I mean, it's an intricate course. There are exams. I got sought out. What are we going to do? He's destroyed. I mean, actually, it wasn't even the ceramic pot. It was this funny sort of terracotta underplate under the pot with a cactus in it. Very expensive. I said, what do you care? We're paying you $15,000 for this event. What does that thing cost, a buck or two? He said, eh? I said, put it on the bill. Stop it, you know. So he sort of... You can see him trying to weigh, should he make a big deal about $2 or $3 when they're getting over $15,000, plus food and all these other things. And he decided that that was okay. Incidentally, I was asked to tell humorous but true anecdotes, and luckily some of the villains in these pieces are present. Let me tell another one about a different Hilton, not the one in Atlanta, but the one in San Francisco. The San Francisco Hilton opened around 87, maybe something like that, near Union Square, and it basically is comprised of three separate towers, each of which, I don't know, is 20, 25 stories tall, containing the rooms, and it's got this base that has the ballrooms, the registration, et cetera, contained within. Around the end of the first day of registration, when the tutorials were going on, I noticed a whole bunch of guys, including one from AT&T/Bell, which was still an entity in those days, standing near the big board at the foot of the elevator, of one bank of elevators, the main bank, with all the lights were going up and down with all the numerals and the floor that each elevator was on, etc. And he was holding what I would call a seminar on how does the scheduling work on this sort of thing. And they were having a great time. I went away and I was sitting down in the bar with some guys and hunted up by yet another hotel manager. The Hyatt managers and the Hilton managers of North America hate computer geeks, but they know they can make money from them. One of your people has broken all of our elevators, was the opening line. I am not kidding. I saw my spouse come in earlier. She could vouch for that. I said, all right, tell me what's the matter. So apparently all the elevators were stopped, every bank in each of the three towers. I said, oh, thinking to myself, ah, yes, a demo for the seminar course in scheduling. So I got up, I walked around a little bit, and I located one of the guys who had been there that I had noticed, who had noticed, and I said, I don't know who did it. I don't care how you did it. Have them fix it now. And about a minute and a half later, the elevators were all working again. 2 days later, I asked the villain of the piece, who incidentally was the person who did the scheduling for the 4 ESS and the 5 ESS, the electronic switching systems for telephones. So, I mean, he really understood the topic, what it was. And he said, well, from looking at the numbers, you could see that what the algorithm was that if someone pushed an up button and there was a car below that floor moving up, it would stop there and then continue up, and the reverse for down. I said, yes. And if there were two cars moving, it would be the closer one. I said, yes. He said, but if they were all in the same place, that teeny toony chip had no way of making a decision. And so they all stayed where they were. So they got 9 guys, synchronized their watches. One got in each car. They went to, I can't remember which, but either 5, 6, or 7. Held the door open and then just got out.
You had 9 elevators at the same floor, and it didn't matter because no matter where you were to ring, it couldn't decide which one to send. And what they had done was they had just, one guy had walked up gone up the escalators and then walked up 2 flights of stairs and gotten into 1 car and broken the magic. But the thing is that what's horrible about it is that there's no one here, except perhaps this young person, who doesn't comprehend exactly what was going on. And it was a great example of how stupid that kind of a scheduler is. But it really gets people upset when we do that sort of thing. And I mean, the thing is, I used to come home from meetings and I would tell my wife, or when she lived with us, our younger daughter, you know, I really love those guys. And the answer is, I do, and I did, and I still do. And the reason for it is because they're so smart that they break things. We all break things. There's probably no one here at some point when he was 7, 8, 9 years old that didn't take apart the toaster, the alarm clock, the radio. And then you would put it all together because you knew you could do that. And frequently, maybe all the time, you would get it back together and there would be a spring or a gear or a screw. But the damn thing worked anyway. And your mother would never realize it. How many of you have never done something like that? Right. No, I mean, the thing is that, incidentally, now I will go into propaganda mode for a second. This is why the DMCA and Bill 30, C-32 here, etc., are absolute evils. The idea that you would make it illegal for tinkerers to do what they have to do to become professionals. You can't become a professional software person, hardware hacker, what have you, without breaking that stuff. You have to tinker with it. I mean, it's a real compulsion. And making that illegal means that both major North American countries will take a step back in technology, it seems to me. That the next generation of kids not being allowed to tinker. Not that your parents really cared when you blew the windows out of the basement because you were experimenting with your chemistry set. Oh, no. But the thing is that no one here has ever done that either, I'll bet. You know, you can no longer buy a real chemistry set in the States. I doubt if you can in Canada, because there are too many things there that might be poisonous or explosive or inflammatory. What's inflammatory is not letting the kids do it. Any rate, it is really cuckoo. I mean, I understand the large corporations who don't want us all running around stealing incredibly valuable movies, bad rock and roll, even worse, country western, whatever. But the thing is that it really doesn't matter. Sending a kid to jail for taking apart his Xbox is really dumb. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. But the thing is that we all have to be very cautious about that. Since I see it's 9:15, by the century-old chimes up there, I will tell one more anecdote from years later, which makes it funnier to me. Years later, I was not executive director of Usenix. I had been and was no longer executive director of the Sun User Group, and I was now VP of the Free Software Foundation, a small, totally informal body run by a total madman. I happen to be a great friend of Richard's, incidentally, but he is crazy. The thing is that the conference was back, and
the town and country in San Diego, California, where USENIX has frequently had its conferences. And I don't know, do managers ever move, or do they stay at the same hotel forever once they get to be a manager? At any rate, the manager from two or three conferences there earlier grabbed me by the upper arm and said, "You must come with me. This is disgraceful." You'll notice the way they always tell you, you've got to stop whatever it is. They don't tell you what it is at the point. They're just too enraptured. And he dragged me over. They have a really lovely, quite large outdoor hot tub capable of holding, God knows, probably well over a dozen folks, possibly even two dozen if you're friendly. And there in the hot tub were 8 or 10, what should I call them, USENIX-y? He said, "They're not wearing suits." I said, "So what?" You know, I said, "They're all adults." He said, "But the women aren't wearing suits either." And I looked, and sure enough, there was Evie Nemeth and Ellie Young, who's still the executive director of USENIX. There was at least one other female. I'm trying to remember who it was. Might have been Pat Wilson. Anyway, and Gretchen Phillips. And there were Ellie's husband, Alain, Gretchen's future husband, the same John Quarterman, of whom you saw a picture earlier, et cetera. I said, "Well, so what? You know, I mean, they're all adults. I mean, actually, at that point, there probably wasn't anybody. There may have been one person under 50, you know. I mean, it's..." He said, "Well, you know, they're not supposed to do that." I said, "What are they doing? They're sitting in the hot tub talking. In fact, they were talking about technical matters." But I didn't say that to him. Anyway, I said, "Leave them alone. It's not hurting you, you know." I said, "And anyway, I don't run this thing anymore." He said, "Well, who's in charge?" I said, "She is." I think that's about where I want it to go to. I see I can get you all laughing, which is the important thing. Will this thing light up again? No. Dan, you've got too rapid a timeout on your password.
I should have disabled it before we came on.
I feel disabled anyway, but that's a different question. Oh, you knew these guys, I presume. That's Kirk, and that's Eric. anyway, and this is self-serving propaganda. It's a real quick read, probably under 2 hours. And I don't have copies with me, but you can get them from Amazon Canada and Amazon US. Is there anyone from countries other than the US and Canada?
Mexico.
Oh, do you get things from Amazon in Mexico, or?
Well, some things cannot be shipped.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry. Anyone from Albania? Thanks, Erwin. That's where I wanted to see where you were sitting. we met last year at the first Albanian free software conference, which was terrific, and I gather will never be repeated. Yeah. Crazy what governments do. Anyway, thank you very much. I will be around. If you have questions, you want to make stupid remarks, I'm happy to talk to guys. Thank you. Oh, you attached it.
I have your contact.
Was that okay?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Peter. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you all very much indeed. All I can say is that since today is 73, you really wonder what there is to celebrate, except perhaps that you've achieved it. But thank you very much.
Thank you. Let's see here.
No questions? Sir?
For as long as I've been involved in free software, open source software, there's been a concern about the number of women involved in conferences and in development. Has that always been the way, as long as you've been involved?
The first Usenix meeting that I went to was June 1979 in Toronto. I had just stepped down from being a member of the Governing Council of the University of Toronto, and Lou Katz, an old friend of mine, was up in Toronto, and so he dragged me along. There were, if I remember, about 1,100 or 1,200 attendees. There were three females. One was Evie Nemeth, of whom probably most of you have heard. One was Debbie Scherer, who was the vice president of Mount Zainu at that point. And I can't remember who the third one was. It was very interesting. When I was in Albania last year, in Vlora, I would say that between 20 and 25% of the attendees were female. More, maybe 40%. On the other hand, when I was in Kosovo 10 days later, last year, there were about five women present at the technical university, two of whom were the dean of the faculty and the chair of computer science. So it really is pretty strange. I've been traveling. A lot of us do that. When I was in Vienna, there were about three women in an audience about this size, maybe a little bit larger than this. So even when you're in three countries relatively close to one another, it varies tremendously. I still think there are vastly too few. When I look at the enrollments on, let's say, the baccalaureate level or the community college level, College of Applied Science and Technology level, it's very close to 40 or 50% female. And then they all seem to think that either what they do is they have to go to be a sysad or do documentation. And it's only too rare that we get a Margot Seltzer, for example, who went on, got a PhD, publishes, is a professor at Harvard, etc. Mary? What's Anne's last name? Rogers, sorry, who went on to be from IBM to graduate school, back to IBM to be a professor at Princeton, and then step down from that to work for AT&T after the big split. But there are way too few of them. And the idea that I can stand here and think of several is shocking. I don't know. I don't know what one can do about it. I'm the only male in my family. I mean, our daughters seem to be quite successful at things. but it's strange. I don't know if they're deterred. It can't be the mathematics or the fact that you actually have to do coding. I mean, I know women who are just as good at that as anybody else. But no, there are too few. I don't know. If anyone has ideas about how to convince young women that this is a field they should go into, I mean, well, your wife is a fairly bright young woman. I mean, you don't mind my saying so. The mother of our daughters is back there wincing as you said that.
I got something I want to add.
No, sure, go ahead.
If any of you ever been to Meet BSD in Poland, apparently they have a high percentage of female attendees. I don't know what it is, but if you talk to Drew Levine about it, she can tell you more. Even if you look at the photographs of the groups. Say that again louder, and I'll repeat it. It's because Polish hackers are cool. That's the reason.
Well, I don't know. North American hackers are cool.
Any more questions?
No. That's the kind of question one has to have. Yeah, you see that? You stop listening to a strange, large man.
This is not that doesn't translate well over audio. I'm sorry for the people listening, but that was wonderful. We have a few minutes before the next sessions start, so we've got to close this one down. Thank you to Peter. If you have any questions, sorry, we don't really have any time right now, so you'll have to track us down later. You should all know which rooms you're going to, but that might help you. Thank you.